James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS network. And we've got another great show. We've got some crazy things happening up here on the mountain I wanted to talk about first. We've got a massive fire going on the right side of Mount Adams, or the east side, and most of it's on the reservation, but it's been coming our way, and it looks like it's shifting back the other way, which is great. So we've been doing these exercises to actually change the winds to blow it back on itself, and you know, using the Yigong Airbender series, and it's actually working. It's funny watching this. This is the second fire we've had up here. We had one during the conference, and now we have Laura Eisenhower and Dr. Dream here this weekend, and we have another big fire. I think it's kind of interesting. But in both cases, the fire blew back on itself. I think it's about a 10,000-acre fire now. And hopefully they've got a handle on it. We've got some rain coming in and a lot cooler weather, which is going to help out. But anyway, say some prayers for the Yakima tribe over there and the mountain, and send some nice rain there to put this fire out. There's another few things going on too. If I haven't gotten back to you on email, our computers, we're having so many problems with the computers. I can't even use the computer or Skype or anything else anymore. It's just gotten so bad. There's so much interference that I have to use other means to do the show because it keeps getting shut down. But anyway, it looks like you know, it's going to keep doing the show no matter what. You know, it's like I moved different places to get signals and to do the show, and it seems to be working. But there's a major, major effort to close this down. And, you know, it comes with the territory. And if you're receiving a lot of flack, you're over the target. But that's all I want to say about that. But, you know, I don't think we're ignoring you. Send an email to the office at esetterreservations@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you. And the best way is to go through the office, because my personal email is just gone, you know, basically. So anyway, with that out of the way, we've got Winston Stroud on the show today. It's going to be an awesome show. There's a lot of things we want to talk about, a lot of things happening in the planet concerning the legal system. And one of the aspects of the shift to the new paradigm is the deconstructing of the current debt-focused monetary system. And there's been a lot of information, and mostly disinformation, about what the transition system and the new system will look like. And I can think of no better one to provide insights into this than my good friend and tonight's guest, Winston Stroud. Winston Stroud's an educator, author, researcher, lecturer focusing on the history, origins, and foundational concepts related to commerce. After graduating from college with a degree in psychology, a little hope of getting a paying job, he supported himself and his family by working as a carpenter in the construction industry. For the most part, he enjoyed the work he was doing, but he couldn't shake the feeling that he had another true calling. He began to notice that in his daily interactions with the world of commerce, there were many inconsistencies and contradictions. So Winston is a lifelong student, and the more knowledge he gained, the more he saw that there was a true need for a library of commercial education material. He created Solutions in Commerce to provide people the tools they needed to understand and navigate our complicated commercial world by providing educational material and solutions that are dubiously absent from the standard curriculums of today. And his website is www.wssic.com. Winston, welcome to the show. Are you with us?
Yeah, how's the sound?
Oh, you sound great on my end.
Okay, great. So, well, okay, then we can go forward.
Great. I know you got a seminar coming up actually, this Saturday. By the time this show airs, it'll be too late, unfortunately. But I know you've got some other upcoming events. You have a major workshop here as well coming up. But
yes,
we'll get into that later. There's so much to cover right now. I don't know where you want to go. You know, it's like the world is falling apart, and we're trying to make sense out of it, figure out what the new world is going to be like, and maybe we can cover that or wherever you want to take us. I'll just turn the reins over to you.
Well, let me say, the world's not falling apart. The sky is not falling in. We're simply going through a correction period. And mm-hmm. so things are being corrected, put the way that they should be, and so you know, people ought not to live in fear. Probably, you know, because we have involved ourselves so much in the old system, that a lot of times our vision is a bit clouded because we have involved ourselves in the illusion. To the point that we think that the illusion is reality, and so we have to break through that a little bit. So for some, it won't be such a hard move to make, but for others, they might just have a little bit of a problem. But that's why we do education and try to bring these things to the forefront so that people can benefit by it, and hopefully when the changes come to make the corrections, then it won't be such a problem, you know, for people to shift into it. So that's kind of why we do education and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So the old world is basically kind of collapsing, you might say, and there's a new world, a whole new system taking its place, or the old system. And so basically we're in that transition period, you know, where, well, I tell you what, I have people come into me constantly. I mean, it's a daily thing. And they just say, I can't do this job anymore. I cannot be in this business anymore, or I can't live in this relationship anymore. And they're in that middle of that transition period. They don't know where we're going to go, or what the new job or the new relationship or the new whatever business is going to be. But so they're really freaking out right now. I wonder if you could address some of that.
Well, first off, everybody needs to be calm.
Yeah.
Need not to get agitated about all these things. After everything is said and done, it's all going to work out. And the effort that's being made is to make the transition as smoothly as possible with the least expense, you know, to people's lives and so forth. But, you know, if you have been living in an illusion without any information or any knowledge about what things could really be like, then I can see the trauma that would occur, but certainly for many people who have been working with some of these spiritual enlightenments and these kind of things, then, you know, this change is happening. It's what we've been looking for. And so... So people need to just take a deep breath, rest a little bit, you know, get out and maybe do some meditating or walk through nature or something like that. But you know, people just need to be calm. This is not a trauma. This is just a correction.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I always say, you know, it's evolution instead of revolution, and hopefully things evolve peacefully and fall into place, and the transition is an easy one, you know, because it's the other option is not something we want to experience.
Yeah, for the last number of years, when the people at the top, if I can use that word, but the people who were in the know of the changing conditions, realized that perhaps it would cause a certain amount of anxiety and so forth to the general people. Great efforts have been made to ensure a smooth transition, and so it's been worked on for quite a number of years, because in anticipation of this change, which was inevitable, I mean, it had to happen. And so, again, out of compassion, and not just to dump all this in people's laps, you know, right up front without any kind of help in the matter, then it has been worked on to a great deal so there would be a smooth transition. And some of these that are getting spiritually awakened to a certain extent to say, for instance, hey, I can't do this anymore. I can't do it this way. Well, that's very indicative. That's very indicative of what's happening. I mean, aside from the temporal things that happen, like the corrections in banking, the corrections in government, and all these kind of things, there's also a correction that we all need to make than that is to put aside, like you say, put aside the old programs and go into this new paradigm kind of fresh a little bit. And so, but I think it's going to be okay. People don't need to worry.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of what I see people sending me these YouTube presentations over and over, you know, end of the world, the collapse is imminent. Their alien invasion is next week, you know, and you know, as long as disclosure is going to happen tomorrow, you know, it's just like I go, you know, and I always tell people, you know, you got to just turn that off and develop your own internal awareness, you know, because we have the ability to know directly what's going on and to sense and feel what's happening, and we can do research. You know, but do it without fear, you know, with loving detachment when you look at all this stuff. And it's funny because I just get deluged with emails and things, and I'm almost going, well, actually, they're doing me a favor by taking out my emails because I have to answer a bazillion emails of all these people, you know, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? You know, and so... You know, I just go, just sit with it, you know, get, like you were saying, get out in nature, you know, start asking the questions internally and develop your own inner sensitivity, your own inner guidance, and you'll get the answers. But it is just total chaos out there on the internet, you know, as far as trying to get information.
Well, you have to understand that a lot of that fear porn that's being put out there is being put out by the cabal, the CIA, and all those people. And they know the end has come, but being true sociopaths as they are, then they simply won't give up, and so they'll struggle right down to the last moment, to their last dying breath, maintaining that junk. And so they'll keep putting all that junk out there on the internet. And if people would simply look at some presentation they're looking at and say, does this cause fear in my heart, or does it cause hope? If it causes hope, then we have some reasonable assurance that the information is good and correct. But if it causes fear, then just turn it off.
Yeah. Well, what do you do with the people that actually accuse you of fear porn when you point out the problem, you know? And you just say, well, there's a correction coming, and you point out the problem. But you do the wraparound, you give them the solution. They go, well, you're just focusing on negative. You know, you're just focusing on fear. And I said, no, I'm just, you know, I'm just looking at the obvious right now, and I'm not in fear. You know, I'm just stating the obvious. And that these things are going to change. It's not going to be business as usual. And so it's a good idea to make whatever adjustments now in your life so you can just flow with this transition.
Well, you know, we've all heard this before, but, you know, years ago, it was brought to my attention, either you can be a part of the problem or you can be a part of the solution. And so I'm solution-oriented. I mean, if it's broke, then let's go fix it. You know, if you have to get your hands greasy or you get your clothes dirty to do it, then that's what has to be done. But you know, I'm solution-oriented, you know, boots on the ground, and hence the title of my project here, which is Solutions in Commerce. It's not Problems in Commerce, it's Solutions in Commerce.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good one. I know that's an awesome, you've got some incredible, how many books have you written so far?
Oh, I just wrote some books. They're not technical books. They're more casual reading to explain some of these things. For instance, the book that I wrote about court was actually just a recap of some of my experiences in dealing in the court and to demonstrate the technology by simply, you know, making it easy reading. It's not... technical, but it is technical if you watch very carefully how I handled certain situations. So again, you know, when I write things, you know, I'm pretty much laid back and try to be a little bit humorous sometimes. Because when I go to court, you know, a lot of times we do have a good laugh. I mean, if you can get everybody in the courtroom laughing, if you can change the dynamics of the energy there by a good laugh and so forth, you can see great changes. So a lot of times, you know, we try to, when I write things, I try to be as casual as possible, interject a little bit of humor here and there to put people at ease. Because I know that people, especially when they go to court for the first time, they're on pins and needles, and they don't need to be.
Oh, yeah.
I keep telling people, yeah. Hey, if you can go down to a department store and buy a pair of pants, you can handle court. It's the same thing. It's just business. That's all it is.
Yeah. And I know I had that paradigm going, too, when I had to go to court. I had to go to court about 10 times on property here, and I was freaking out in the beginning. And these guys were trumping up charges like felonies and things on things that actually were misdemeanors, and you can't make a felony into a misdemeanor, but they were just, it was unbelievable, the things they were coming up with. But, I got, after a while, we ended up dismissing three judges and got rid of a couple prosecuting attorneys, and it just kept going. And some of it was actually humor. When it went down and watching some of the judges and the looks on their faces and saying, I can't go further with this, it got to be kind of humorous towards the end, but I went in there with dread, I go, oh God, man, this guy's going to eat me for lunch, but worked through that. And I still don't enjoy it. I don't like the energy in that court system and what it's tied into, but that's what we're here to do, to change that system.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I'll give one clue. A fellow pointed this out to me, and that was, if you remember in that first Matrix movie, when the Neo or whatever his name was, he was talking to that young boy that was bending spoons.
Yeah.
And he asked him how he did it, and the kid said, what spoon? There's no spoon.
Yeah.
So anyway, fellow I was talking to, he understood that concept. He knew that the court was an illusion. He knew it was all a fiction. So what he would do in preparation to go, like, for instance, to a civil court or something, he would take a spoon and bend it, just like in that movie. He put that spoon in front of him on his desk there. And so he would always look at that spoon, and if he ever started to get off point, he'd look back at the spoon to draw him back to what he should be doing. So he was able to prevail in some of those matters by simply looking at that spoon and reminding himself, this is all an illusion.
For most people that are new to this, like telling them that the court is an illusion, I'm sure that would freak them out. They don't understand the dynamics of that. I wonder if there's a simple way of explaining that as to why it is an illusion.
Well, first off, you should go back and take a close look at what the subject matter of a court is. For instance, if you want to look at statutes and codes, as a perfect example, if you'll go read what's called the United States Code, which is Title 1 through Title 50. In the preface, in Volume 1, Title 1, it comes right out and tells you this is all fiction. So what can you imagine is going to happen in the other volume? It's the same stuff.
Yeah.
So once you understand that, then you can act accordingly and so forth. And then you gain a little bit of experience. Hey, I always tell people, hey, if you got some free time, just go down to the courthouse and sit and watch. But watch it from the point of view, that we're talking about here, because everything that goes on in the court is basically a soap opera. All this he said, she said kind of stuff going on, through the teaching and education, we show people how to turn it into reality, so you can really get something done. But for the most part, it's just a song and dance. It's a dog and pony show. If you want some good entertainment, just go down to the courthouse, listen to the attorneys. To me, it's a joke. Now, what I like to do you know, just for fun. If I'm in a courtroom for whatever reason, typically the attorneys all huddle together, you know, so they can discuss things,
yeah,
make their deals and all that kind of. So I go over and sit right next to them, so I can hear everything they're saying, and they know I'm there, so I just do it for fun. I just do it for fun to mess with them, you know.
Yeah.
Or you can have all kinds of fun down at the courthouse.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't understand, but attorney is to, you know, their job is to turn you over, basically. They're not really there,
yeah,
for your highest and best good. They're there to turn you, you know, over to the courts, basically, and where,
yeah,
you know, where everybody plea bargains and things like that. And you know, that's one of the things that people don't understand. And also, too, you know, isn't the... I mean, they work for the Queen. I mean, what business do you have with the Queen?
You know? I don't have any business with the Queen, but actually, they don't work so much for the Queen. They actually work for the City of London, the Temple Bar.
Yeah.
And actually, the Queen of England herself, when she goes into the city, she has to bow to the mayor. So in essence, then, it's not so much the Queen that we're worried,
yeah,
about. It's the mayor of the City of London. And we've done a few things to the city that they didn't really like. I mean, I could tell that story if you want to hear it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd definitely like to hear it because I know that it wasn't Stanford, the British something registry, the Bar Association,
well, yeah,
which they all join,
yeah,
which has nothing to do with us, basically.
No, it doesn't really. Anyway, what we did was, you know, sometimes, I mean, I work in the third dimension quite a bit, but I also work in higher dimensions time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So when we did that seminar over there in London, we went up to the observatory, and I saw the brass inlay that had the prime meridian in it, you know. So I looked down,
uh-huh,
that line, and it headed right down to the City of London, which indicated to me that the City of London was in control of the start and stop of all commerce, because they were controlling time. So,
mm-hmm,
as it turned out, I had a very powerful shaman that I was working with, and so I asked her, I said, are you capable of moving that prime meridian over to the Rose Line? Now, the Rose Line is an ancient natural ley line. It's actually,
mm-hmm,
the title of it, the Dragon Rose Line. So I asked her, I said,
yeah,
can you move that prime meridian over there? She said, yeah, I can do that. I said, we'll do it then.
Mm-hmm.
So she did. She moved it over to the Rose Line, anchored it down. She had told me previously that when she does something in the ether, it takes about 3 days to materialize in the physical world.
Yeah.
The very next day, she was hot after me on Skype because of the time difference. You know, I mean, it was afternoon for her, but it was early morning for me. But anyway, she was really excited to get me on Skype because she wanted to tell me what had happened. And what she said, if she hadn't been watching it, she wouldn't have realized it. But she said right there where they were, from about 8 in the morning to about 3 in the afternoon, she said time stood still. Now, what was happening, because of her effort on the ether, that timeline that was represented by the prime meridian slowly but surely moved over onto the Rose Line, where she anchored it down. So I asked her, I said, you know, that's pretty interesting. I said, can you take a look there at the City of London to see what the reaction has been? She said, no. She said, I can't do that. She said, if I open it up, she said, they'll attack me. I said, okay,
yeah,
do
yeah,
it then. So what she did do, she had a friend of hers who was psychic that do a remote view. And she reported,
uh-huh,
yeah, she said, they're running around like crazy, not trying to figure out what had happened to them. And she also remote viewed the Vatican with the same reaction. So they knew we moved the control of the timeline away from them over to a natural ley line so that commerce would have a fair chance. In other words, our start and stop of time at that point was regulated from a natural ley line rather than an artificial one that was under the control of the City of London. So we do some fun things from time to time, not just our sports and whatnot, but we do some other fun things too.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Getting back to the more feet on the ground. You know, I know there's a lot of people that are dealing, you know, with the system right now, and they're in the system, and they're just going, you know, this is ridiculous. How do I get out of here? I know you've got a lot of solutions in your books and the other things you've written, but, you know, maybe in a nutshell, we can give them some advice or where they could turn to find information on how to kind of unplug from the system and get out from under the grips of this old draconian program that we've had running for quite some time.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. So let me make the plug right now. We have been able to develop very much what you just spoke of there, and we will be presenting that at the seminar at the East Eddy Ranch Labor Day weekend, which is September 4th through the 6th, right there at East Eddy Ranch. So people need to get to that. But in essence, what we've done is to, and again, the title or the theme of our seminar is going to be removing commercial karma. Mm-hmm. Now, the karma that we talk about in commerce is debt.
Yeah.
Now, debt's an illusion. It's only a concept. But people, when they take it for reality, then it becomes real to them. And so we've done everything we could for the last, we've been in operation, this solution in commerce now for almost 11 years. And so we've tried to create as many solutions, technologies, and so forth to deal basically with debt that we could. But again, when people believe that debt is a reality, then they take it on as karma, as a backload. I don't know the new generation, but the older generation, mm-hmm. they were familiar with a book called Pilgrim's Progress. And in that book, it was demonstrated this fellow who was the pilgrim was carrying a heavy backload. And the backload that this pilgrim was carrying was something that the Protestant people called sin. Now sin mm-hmm. is the term that we find in religion, and the word that we use for sin in commerce is called debt. So many people are very much like this pilgrim, carrying around all these concepts and so forth. And that's all it is a concept. There is no such thing. It only as we believe it. And so one of the purposes of this seminar is to how to release that commercial karma, and I believe that we have a complete package that will allow them to do so. Now, it's not so much getting out of the system, but it's about controlling the system. So rather mm-hmm. than have the system controlling you, what we anticipate is the ability for you to control the system. I've always maintained that there's nothing wrong with the system. The problem is misapplication or misuse of it, by people who are in charge of the system or because the people, for lack of knowledge and understanding, they misuse the system. So there has to be a little bit of give and take on both sides of that question there. But we can demonstrate the technology, which is useful, to get yourself to where the system is not controlling you. That's the object.
Mm-hmm. You know, the way, maybe we can go further than that, the way debt is created, kind of let people understand that. I know my brother went through a whole mess with a mortgage, and uh-huh. you know, we were talking a lot about that, and you know, he's still working on that one. But the you know, the money is just numbers. You know, somebody just punched some numbers in. They never loaned you anything. They never gave you anything. All they did was punch some numbers in, and now you're enslaved for the next 30 years. You know, to pay back them, you know, for just punching some numbers into a system. And I think, you know, that one might be a good topic to go into on why we allow ourselves to be totally enslaved by just numbers that are punched into a system.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I have found, and many of us have found, is that generally people misunderstand what money is and how it's created. Because there's lots of different kinds of money. Mm-hmm. And so when we start talking about what we would call public money or money that's
yeah.
used within that system, that's an entirely different kind of money than what we would do if we're out here in the private. And so people say, well, you know, gold or silver or Federal Reserve notes and all that kind of thing. But actually, you know, there's a vast array of different kinds of money. For instance, here in the United States, probably up until just recently, the major currency that was in use in the United States was bank checks. I think bank mm-hmm. checks accounted for about 70 to 75% of all the currency in use in the country, and Federal Reserve notes themselves only constituted about 6 or 7% as far as use. So, again, you know, when people start thinking about money, the creation of money, how money is created, how it's used, and so forth, you know, there's generally a huge misunderstanding about that. So when you start talking about commerce, it's key to understand, you know, about money, its creation, its use, and so forth, and then about the various varieties of money. So those things are fundamental. I did want to comment on this what you call mortgage. I'll give it to you this way. And that was along about 2010, during that period of time, I came to associate with a man who was very high up in the international community. That was, he was the chief of the cabinet of the Office of International Treasury Control. Also, mm-hmm. he's the settler on the Sukarno Trust. So he's very, very knowledgeable. And so we got to be friends, and I started giving him some information about the techniques and technicalities of mortgages and so forth, and he really picked up on it real quick. So what we did for fun, I shouldn't say for fun, we were doing it for real, we created a white paper to describe that whole process with the intention that we would send that around to the various financial ministers in Europe so they could be enlightened on the true nature of what was going on in their countries in relationship to the international banks. We passed that around. The one country, actually it should have been two if the election had gone the other way, but the one country that actually took that up was Ireland. And so the financial minister of Ireland, he got that information into his hands. He took a close look at what we were saying. And so he contacted the banks that were claiming that Ireland owed the money. And his position was, if you can prove that you loaned us any money, we'll gladly repay you. But if you can't prove it, go pound sand. And he stuck to it.
Yeah.
And so we just about had it in Greece. If we could have got it, if the election had gone the other way and this other fellow had become the, I don't know, president or whatever they call it there, he was prepared to go that same direction. And if that had happened, certainly Greece would not be having the problems they're having right now. Because in essence what they were doing, they were disavowing a debt that did not exist only in somebody's mind. It's the same mm-hmm. thing we have here with our mortgages on our, you know, real estate or other secured debts and so forth. And that is that there was not any money that traded hands. Not a bit of it. Not a bit of it. It was all handled electronically with electronic money, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And in essence, there was no debt. And so that's one of the angles sometimes we use with resolving mortgage problems. There's certainly other other ways that we deal with. And in conjunction with that, with the process that I'm going to demonstrate at your up at your ranch at our seminar, I'm going to show you how to apply that very same technology to mortgages. So this is really an important seminar. I have presented this information at our private seminar we did back in June. The webinar that I'll be doing tomorrow, which will be in the past by the time this hits the airwaves, but we'll also be going over those processes and techniques at that webinar. I believe that this information is so vital that I'm trying to put it out as many times, as many places as possible, because in essence, if everybody in the United States or if everybody in any country where you're at applied this technology, that would be the end of the control of the fictitious government over the people. We can restore the people from being and acting as a fiction. We can restore them back to the position of being real men and women. So that's the essence of what we're doing.
Well, I know the fictitious government. I mean, for first time listeners, they may not even understand what we're referring to. But the fact of the matter is that the United States of America Inc. is not really the United States of America. I mean, it's a whole different it's a corporation basically, and when people think that they're actually living in the United States of America with all the rights and everything else, granted by that, they actually, in truth, are being governed by a whole different system.
Yeah, I think that movie that Russo put out before he passed, Freedom to Fascism.
Yeah,
People need to go and review that movie because it's a good demonstration about exactly what we're talking about here. Fascism refers to government by corporation, and that's what we have evolved into in the United States. It's kind of funny. Years ago, probably, I don't know, maybe 12, 13 years ago, when I still had family and some kids at home, we took a trip. We went all the way back east, and we ended up in Washington, D.C., because I wanted them to see all the different things, And so anyway, we were in the Capitol building, and there was a tour going through. So I told the kids, hey, let's just tag along with these guys and see what kind of things they're going to see. So we went into the House of Representatives there. And the tour guide, he was talking about all the different things and whatnot. And then he made the mistake of saying, are there any questions? So I said, yeah, I got questions. Well, see, behind the speaker's podium, there's two symbols there, which is the symbol of fascism, which is a bundle of sticks with a hatchet head stuck in them. And they're on both sides of the podium there. So I just asked the tour guide, I said, now, what's those... what's them funny-looking symbols there with the axe head sticking out? And he said, moving right along. So off they went. He knew what I was talking about. It was a fascism, for crying out loud, right there in the House of Representatives. So people should take a look at that and see exactly how our government is being controlled and run. We are, as Russo points out, a fascist state.
That's funny.
I mean, everybody's crying and whining back in the 40s about Nazi Germany and being a bunch of fascists. And we had a war against them, against fascism, as we thought. And then you go into the House of Representatives in our modern time, and there you see the very same symbols of fascism sticking right there. So it sounds to me like it was a bunch of fascists fighting with another bunch of fascists.
Yeah, probably over some control of some, the world, probably, basically.
Yeah,
I find it interesting. Have you read Jim Mars's work? Says that we're governed by some negative aliens and Nazis basically, and he goes the whole gamut and covers the whole historical account of it, how we brought all the Yeah, all the Nazis over with Paperclip, Project Paperclip, and you know, they end up becoming major players in our alphabet agencies, and then, you know, and also NASA, you know, and everything else, and then they rose to the top there, and now they're in control of that. So it's just like, I don't think we want anything in that war.
Well, let me make this observation. That even though we imported huge amounts of fascist Nazis into the country, would they have been able to have that influence on the country if the people had not been in that mindset themselves? Now, here's the mindset that allows that to happen, and that is people have the tendency to want to have somebody else or some other entity be responsible for them.
Exactly.
Some people are not self-reliant. They don't take things to themselves. They don't solve their own problems. They always go to somebody else to solve their problems. And so the question is, would the Nazis, the fascists, have been able to have the influence in this country that they have had if the people were not primed for it? And we are.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if something happens, you go call somebody to fix it for you. I mean, if you
sick,
you go to the doctor. If your car breaks down, you call a mechanic. I mean, because people, you know, simply want to pay someone else to do their work for them. In some instances where you really can't do anything about something, then you call in a professional. But for the most part, you know, why would you call an electrician to change a light bulb for you? It's gotten down to that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, we've given what I always say, you know, whenever you put your power outside of yourself, you know, there's always those that'll snatch it up and eventually use it against you. And that's basically what we do in every aspect of our life. And then we wonder, you know, how come they're not doing what we're saying? How come they're not? And he goes, because you gave them all your power and they're going to do what they want to do, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think people would be well served to be a little bit more self-reliant and stop all this, you know, fascist thought process, because, you know, if you're thinking that way, naturally that's how the government's going to react.
Yeah.
So we can't blame the Nazis for all this. We've got to look in the mirror and say, hey, am I partly responsible for the way things have gone? And the answer to that question is, yes, I am. Now, what can I do to correct it? That's what we need to look at.
Yeah, and I think it's that, you know, your solution, basically the ultimate solution, is to take your power back and become sovereign and self-reliant, you know. And then one of the master teachers, I love what he said to me one day. He said, the only reason anybody has any power over you is because you want something from them. And that just burned into my brain when he said that. And I really think about that. And I said, you know, we want love, we want acceptance, we want approval. All those things can be found within. You know, we want joy, we want to be happy. We think we're going to get it with all these external touchstones. You know, we want security, we want all these things, but we don't know how to go within and get it. We're so programmed to do everything externally, and I think that's the big fallacy of how they control us. You know, I keep forgetting what's that. Is it the dialectic? Something eclectic or something. What's that called? The parrot that I keep forgetting the name of what they call it.
Yeah,
you know, Hegelian. Yeah, but I can't remember Hegelian something or other. But anyway, it's so obvious. Basically, is that, you know, they create a problem and they act like there's a solution. They create a threat and then they act like they're here to solve the threat or protect you, and all that stuff. It's just like you watch this whole thing, and it's all disempowering. It's all about giving your power away to some other function, you know, and they enslave you through dependency and with all these other systems. So you have to do what they say, because if you don't, they have their finger on the plug or whatever. They can, or the switch, they can, you know, cut you off, you know, so... But as you're saying, you know, the solution to all that is for us to become more sovereign and realize how the system works, so we can figure out a way to step out of it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. As a practical example and demonstration of this, I was once traveling to a certain place with a lady and had a flat tire on the car. So I got out to fix it, of course, and I wasn't familiar mm-hmm. with the car, so I just asked her, I said, well, where's the jack and where's the spare? She said, what's that? I said, you've never changed the tire? She said, no, I never changed the tire. I said, what happens when you get a flat? He said, I call, what's that called?
AAA?
Load assistance or whatever you call. Yeah. She said, I call AAA. I said, check your phone.
Yeah.
And she checked her phone, and she didn't have any bars on it.
So I said, oh, yeah.
But that's a perfect example many times is that, because we're so used to relying on somebody else for even some of the trivial things that mm-hmm. we get into that mindset. And so the first thing you know, our whole life is taken over by someone else. I mean,
yeah.
So,
I know
so
they have,
we need to take, yeah.
Yeah. I'm saying, yeah, take our life back. I see that all these things have hooks in them. You know, it's like this new technology. And we've got the new software, the new this, and they all have these hooks in them. And every time you grab that new software, there's this little catch. Well, we can actually monitor you better with this new software. You know, they don't tell you that part.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, so if you get the latest greatest stuff, it means that you're going to be monitored 24/7, and you're not going to be able to even burp or fart without it going on record, basically.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping to get past some of that. Like I say, the technology I'm going to present at the seminar will go a long way to people taking back their tires, their energy, and so forth. It has broad applications. For instance, it's been about, I don't know, 4 or 5, 6 months ago, I was approached by some native chiefs. They have some contracts and things they ever want to do. And because I'm an international notary, they felt like maybe if I notarized their contracts and so forth, it might have a little bit more weight in what they're doing. So I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a Cherokee chief, a chief of the Lakota Sioux, and another chief come out of Alaska. And so they came to me, and, you know, we're working this contract up. But anyway, the Sioux chief, his wife came with him. So while they were busy talking business, you know, she and I had a chance to visit and talk over some of the things. And she pointed out that many of the children were being abducted by the government off the reservation, and they simply didn't know what to do about it. And I said, really? I said, let me show you what to do. So I showed her this mm-hmm. process, and I said, if you go implement that, I said, number one, they won't be able to take any more children. And I said, with a little bit of effort, I said, you can go back and get the rest of them. And so, again, this technology has a pretty broad application to a lot of different circumstances. And it could be used, to the benefit, you know, not just only of the native people that are getting their children stole on a daily mm-hmm. basis, but also could apply to just people in general walks of life. I get called so many times. You know, people have gotten into some kind of crazy circumstance. You know, a neighbor complained about the noise, and so the Child Protective Services come over and took the children. And here we go. Now we're down to the court trying to deal with that kind of junk.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is happening so much. This is happening so much that I believe that this technology that I have to offer would be a very good use in those kind of situations alone without even talking about anything else. So we have some pretty good things coming up here at this seminar.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm definitely going to be sitting in on that one myself. We should get people an update on that. And that's the September 4th through the 7th. And it's going to be a very in-depth workshop about removing commercial karma and, you know, how to basically stand up for yourself and stand up for your rights. And it's a foundational course, you know, in Karmas 101. So it's going to start the introduction on Friday afternoon, and then we're going to go on and just really dig into this stuff. So do people need to bring, like, a pad and a pencil? That would probably be best interest.
What we do provide at the seminar is a CD disc that will have all of the documents and so forth that we refer to in the seminar. So, mm-hmm. so they'll have those things available. But, yeah, they ought to bring a pencil and paper or whatever so they can take notes of their own selves and so forth. And then after the seminar is over with, then we should be able to produce a DVD of that whole seminar so they can go back and review it. Now, this is a good thing. Let me tell you an experience I've had talking to people. First off, you know, we hold our seminars in the physical world, but I'm always teaching from a higher dimension. And the reason that we have to do that is because, just like what Einstein pointed out, you know, you can't solve a problem, you know, using the same tools that created the problem. So you have to go metaphysical. And so when I teach, then certainly I'm teaching from a higher dimension. Now, so people come to a seminar, for instance, and they hear the message that's given then, and then, you know, that enlightens them to a certain extent. And then when they go back, for instance, and listen to the DVDs of the very seminar they attended, they hear something different. Mm-hmm. And they listen to it the third time, and they hear more yet. Now, what that means is they're ascending commercially. And so, that's a good thing. And we try to always do that as often as we can to reproduce the seminar, because hearing it one time will get you to a certain level, but then going back and listening to it several more times, you know, then you start to move up in your understanding. So that's how we do it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do that too. It's like, a lot of times, you listen to it and you go, wow, I didn't even hear that. and a lot of times I think because we weren't ready to hear it, or we had to have some kind of foundation first before we could hear it. So I think that's an excellent approach to teaching and get this information out. You know, we're coming up to the end of the hour, unfortunately. We can go on and talk about this forever, but I think to get really in depth with this, and definitely people need to come to the workshop September 4th. And they can get information. They can go to the eSETI reservation, at gmail.com, or just go to the website itself. We also have that has all of the conferences on it. They can go to the site, which is on another piece of paper, so I need to find that. But actually, they can go to your site to sign up for the website. Website is
WSSIC.com, which stands for Winston Strauss Solutions in Commerce. The information to sign up for the seminar would be found there, as well as at your website. Or if you have questions or if it's confusing, there's a phone number. You can call the office, and the lady will explain, what's necessary, for that sign-up.
Mm-hmm. And definitely you can go to our situation here over at the ranch and check it out, too. So either way, we can sign you up. And looking forward to seeing everybody, and it's going to be an amazing workshop. I can't wait for this to come to eSETI.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have a good time.
All right, well, thank you, Winston, so much for coming on the show, and we'll see you probably sooner than that. I'm sure we're going to be bumping into each other, but we'll talk soon.
Oh, yeah. Okie dokie, thanks.
All right, take care. Well, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. And private invitations, eSETI.com is another good one, or eSETIreservations@gmail.com if you want to find out more about the event. But anyway, have a great evening, and watch the skies, and work on that pure intent, that open mind and loving heart, and watch the universe unfold. Good night.